Welcome to Sports Rivals with Monty and Ernie. Lively, entertaining banter on sports topics you want to hear.
All right, everyone, wherever you are and however you may be listening, welcome to a special NFL recap, NFL draft recap show with the Sports Rivals. That's Ernie and I'm Monty, and together we are going to break down the NFL draft for the first time, and I'm not sure how long. We're recording on Saturday night, going to release the show on Sunday so that you can know what we felt about the NFL draft. We'll also cover the NBA playoffs, a little bit about Caitlin Clark's historic deal with Nike, and we'll wrap up with Ernie's closing thought. But Ernie, it's all about the NFL draft. Over 700,000 people attended in person in Detroit. That's crazy. I mean, that means like all of Detroit's people were there, or people decided to travel to Detroit, which is crazy. Over 700,000 people in person. I can't fathom traveling across the country to stand there and wait for a pick. And if me as a Rams fan, I would never do that because we never have any picks.
Yeah, that's three quarters of the entire population of Oahu.
Yes.
That actually attended this event.
That attended the draft. So we're going to talk a little bit about our teams first. Ernie's going to break down the Steelers. I'll break down the Rams, who had a first round pick for the first time in 8 years. I personally love the Rams draft. Ernie, what do you think about your Steelers?
I love the Steelers draft. Well, I not love the Steelers draft. I actually, from initial standpoint, you go in with your hype and whatnot, thinking on who's projected to be on your team when it really doesn't go that way. And really, this draft went a different way when six quarterbacks were taken within the first 12 picks. So, you know, dropped a lot of talent down there and made it a lot... made a lot of not difficult decisions, but a lot of difficult decisions in regards to which talented player are you gonna pick.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so with the Steelers, I think with the first round we were expecting them to go offense. I had them in my mock taking a center in Derek Barton. You had them taking Amarius Mims, a tackle. Amarius Mims goes two picks before the Steelers.
Right.
The Steelers settle on Washington tackle, guard, a very versatile offensive lineman, Faltanu. Initially, you weren't really sold on that pick, but you're starting to come around to his versatility. I had him going 11 in the draft. A lot of people had him in the top 10.
Yeah.
So slipping to 20, I thought, was a great deal for the Steelers. But what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, initially, I thought, okay, this guy was a little bit overrated. Just based on the fact that he's not for a tackle, which the Steelers need. A lot of people thought this guy is versatile, so that maybe he could work the inside. Even as a center, some people were saying that he could switch to. But primarily what the Steelers need is basically a tackle. And at 6'3" and, you know, and change with, I guess, arm length of 34 inches, the measurables, in my opinion, weren't there. You know, that's why I wanted Amarius Mims.
Who's like 6'8", 6'9".
Exactly, with, you know, the prototypical tackle, even though I don't think he's as accomplished as Faltanu. Faltanu at Washington was primarily, I mean, his gift over there was in pass coverage, you know, with the changeover in offensive coordinators, Smith coming to the Steelers. It's going to be a more run-oriented offense. And that's why I really didn't initially like Faltanu at that position. I mean, I didn't not like him. I just thought there were better, in my opinion, better options out there. But as I saw the tape and how people talk about this guy, and this guy's a Pittsburgh Steeler fan. His father is a Steeler fan. His name, Troy, was named after Troy Polamalu. I mean, what needs to be said about your fandom in regards to, you know, him being a Steeler fan? And I've grown on this pick. But, you know, going into the second round, they pick up their center, you know, in Frazier, and I love that pick. I actually thought they were going to move up in the second round to actually pick their centers, but fortunately enough, the wide receiver run came early into the second round, again, dropping talent, you know, back to the 51st pick where this year's pick, and they got their center over there. third pick, they get local boy Roman Gabriel out of the
Roman Wilson.
Roman
St. Louis.
Yeah.
Second straight year in the third round, the Steelers take a St. Louis Crusader. What are the chances that your team in back-to-back years takes a Hawaii boy from the same high school? Because
everybody knows Hawaii is Steeler Nation.
I'm not sure about that. I guess in Ernie's generation, those of you that are in the 60-70-year-old crowd.
No, but Roman was a little undersized wide receiver, but tough as nails. I mean,
and he makes all the big catches.
He does.
I mean, he makes a lot of big catches. I think he's going to be a good replacement for Deontay.
Yeah.
Slightly different, but possession type receivers. Deontay was a great route runner, probably a little bit better than Roman Wilson at this point, but Roman Wilson will be tough. He can catch passes over the middle. He can separate. He's faster than Deontay ever was, and he's got a great attitude,
yeah,
which is something that the Steelers had been dealing with Deontay for the last couple of years.
Yeah, like you mentioned, he's already got the continuity in having a teammate like Nate. You know, high school, you know, they knew each other in high school playing at St. Louis. So I'm sure Nate's going to give him all the, you know, all the scoops in regards to, you know, playing with the Pittsburgh Steelers and whatnot. So that's an added bonus. In the fourth round, they go with a guard. I'm not sure why they went with a guard, although
the third round, though, first, before guard, Peyton Wilson,
Peyton Wilson.
I wanted my Rams to take. A Buckus Award-winning linebacker. The Steelers got him one pick before the Rams in the third round.
Yeah, and I think why he dropped that far, and you're right, Buckus Award winners normally don't drop this far, but he had an ACL injury. I'm hoping that's past, you know, that is, you know, old news. If it is old news, the Steelers got a steal. You know, even though they do have incumbents coming, not incumbents, but yeah, incumbents in regards to Elandon Robinson and Cole Holcomb, but they also picked up Patrick Queen, perennial All-Pro from the Baltimore Ravens, which solidifies that. That should give Peyton Wilson a lot of, you know, reps learning from the boys who know. So, I think it's a really good pickup at that position.
Oh, I love that pick.
And end of the third round, if this guy can remain healthy, I think the Steelers got a steal. If at the very least, he's going to be a special teams ace, in my opinion.
Yeah, when that pick happened, Ernie, at the 82nd pick, one pick before the Rams, I was swearing your name. I gotta admit, I was like, "F you, Ernie, and the Steelers." All right, move on. The Steelers had three more picks. One in the fourth, two in the sixth. What are your thoughts on Mason McCormick from South Dakota State?
It's an okay pick in my opinion. I mean, South Dakota State is a, you know, they're two-time defending national FCS national championship, so they do have a very good program out there. I wanted a defensive back at this position, you know, to go into the guard position for the Steelers. You know, you already have Sayo Malu and James Daniels over there. James Daniels did have an off year in regards to what he has been doing in the past. But I still think he's, you know, it's his position to lose. But McCormick, you know, has all the physical tools. I think he still needs to put on, you know, a little bit more mass out there. But, you know, hey, I think they see diamonds in the rough at this position. I think that's I'm not mad about the pick. I just wanted a DB. They did get their DB in the sixth round, and I won't even go into details in regards to the sixth round. To me, the sixth round is more
like shot in the dark, sir.
Yeah. Basically, in that position, I mean, you're looking for it, basically, you know, you're swinging for the fences, you know, and you're either going to miss bad or you're going to hit a home run, and the home runs are far and few between. So overall, I would give the Steelers, in my opinion right now, again, and this is all conjecture, because everybody says you got to wait 3 years to really judge a draft. I would give my Steelers B+, A-.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, B+, A- is exactly what I'm thinking with the Steelers. I think they got great value in Faltano. I think they got great value in Zach Frazier, who's an absolute perfect Pittsburgh Steelers center. I think they got good value in Roman Wilson, where they picked him up. Some people had him late first round, early second round. Pittsburgh gets him in the middle of the third round, and I think they got tremendous value in linebacker Peyton Wilson. So at the end of the second day, I was really, like I said, swearing up a storm that Huckle Ernie's team is doing so well. But that was tempered by the fact that I was extremely excited about my Los Angeles Rams. Again, Rams having a first-round pick for the first time in 8 years. I believe the Rams nailed this draft. So we lost Aaron Donald.
Right.
And we spent all of our money on the offense. And those of you that really follow the Rams know that the Rams are number one in the NFL with the disproportionate money spent on offense versus defense. The Rams have $160 million on the offensive side of the ball and like $40-50 million on the defensive side of the ball, of which $23 million of that is Aaron Donald,
right,
who's not even going to be playing. So Aaron Donald's retiring. We have to address our defensive line and address it. They did. With their first pick, they take Jared Verse from Florida State. I had him going 21. I had in my mock draft, I had Byron Murphy from Texas sliding down. Unfortunately, Seattle picked him 3 picks before, so the Rams went with the best edge still on the books, Jared Verse. Then in the second round, I love Braden Fiske, but the Rams gave up a lot to move from 52 to 39, giving up 52 and a 2 next year. But teammates from Florida State on right, a dominant defense with tremendous chemistry together. I love those 2 picks. In the third round, we pick up Blake Corum. A lot of Rams fans are like, what the hell? Kyren Williams was, he led the NFL in yards per game. Why are we taking a running back within the top 100 picks? I absolutely love this pick. Couple of reasons. One, Blake Corum is an absolute leader. He was the Michigan leader. He had 27 touchdowns. He is... when you lose an Aaron Donald, you lose much more than a football player. You lose that leadership. And Blake Corum has all those leadership ability. But let's be honest, Rams fans, Kyren Williams, as strong as he was last year, has been injured both years. And last year when he went out for 4 games, our offense sputtered. We were 1-3 when Kyren Williams was out. This gives us insurance in the event that Kyren Williams is out, because Blake Corum and Kyren Williams are clones as to how they run, their size, their build, their zone scheme running. I love the pick of Blake Corum in the third round. Later in the third round, we get Cameron Kitchens, a Miami Hurricane from the U safety, who was supposed to be a first round pick. He slid to the third round. He had an up and down season this year after an early concussion against Georgia Tech, kind of set him back a little bit. But I was telling Ernie off the air, in the history of Miami Hurricane football, there's been 3 DBs, 3 safeties that have had more than 10 interceptions. Cameron Kitchens has 11. The other two, Ed Reed and Sean Taylor, 2 of the best safeties in the history of the NFL. Cam Kitchens, the Rams don't turn the ball over. We need someone to do that. I was ecstatic with that pick. Then today, our first pick wasn't until the 5th round. Brennan Jackson, a captain with Washington State, tireless motor compared to what's the guy from the Raiders, the stud guy, Mason Crosby, in terms of his motor. Brennan Jackson as an edge rusher. And then in the 6th round, Tyler Davis from Clemson drops unexpectedly to the 6th round. I'm glad we got him. So we have 2 edges, 2 defensive tackles, a quality backup running back, a starting caliber safety, and then we picked up Joshua Cardy, the best place kicker in the NCAA last year. And those of you that are Ram fans know that in the history of the NFL, no one missed more field goals than the Rams did last year, missing 16 field goals and 8 extra points. We needed a place kicker. We got one there. Late in the draft, my favorite pick is Bo Limmer, a center from Arkansas, rated super high, a second team All-American, slid to the 6th round. Great insurance for our interior offensive line. So Rams, I absolutely love your pick. Based on what I've had to endure for the last 8 years, I'm going to give you a solid A+. A+ for the Rams. Less Snead and Sean McVay.
Let's go, Rams.
As you know, it's a Saturday night, and we are celebrating that the Lakers finally won a game and the Rams did well. So we are drinking as we do this podcast. So that's going to make it a little bit more entertaining. So let's go ahead, Ernie, and just kind of share some of the highlights of some of the teams that we thought did really well. I'll start off with one team, and then maybe you can go from there.
Okay.
I absolutely loved what the Baltimore Ravens did. Considering where they're picking in the draft, you had Nate Wiggins going pretty early in the draft. They were weak at cornerback with a lot of injuries. They get Nate Wiggins at the 30th pick in the first round, which I think is a tremendous pick. Then Roger Rosengarten, tackle from Washington. Some people had him in the first round. They get him at the end of the second round. He'll step right in and take over that right tackle spot from Moses, who's now with the Jets. Then in the third round, they get Adisa Isaac, a pass rusher, linebacker from Penn State that some had as early as early second round. They get him at the end of the third round. And in the fourth round, they trade up for Devontae Walker, a wide receiver from North Carolina, that I was hoping the Rams were to get. This guy is an absolute stud. He runs great routes, 6'1", tremendous speed. He missed the first six games of the season after transferring from Michigan State. He got cleared, and I saw him light up my Miami Hurricanes and Cam Kitchens for a huge game. I think he's a great wide receiver and a perfect complement for what they have. And in the fourth round, I don't know why, TJ Tampa, who many had as a second round cornerback, dropped all the way to the middle of the end of the fourth round. And then from there, but I think they got Nate Wiggins, Devontae Walker, Roger Rosengarten, Isaac will be a rotational player, and Tampa. They could have gotten 4 or 5 rotational pieces. I love what the Baltimore Ravens did in this year's draft. Unfortunately, for your Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, they were given high grades from, you know, various sites out there. But, you know, when I looked at those high grades, a lot of the this was definitely not on a bell curve, because there are a lot of teams out there that had, you know, A grades. I mean, the lowest grade that I saw was a D+. You know, I don't know if we want to talk about the Atlanta Falcons on what they did with their draft. I'll talk about it a little later. You know, I'll make mention to it a little later when I go into my closing thought. But I don't think you can go, into this draft without talking about the Chicago Bears. Yes, their picks were easy because they had the first pick in the draft and they had the 9th pick in the draft. But just based on the fact where I think these two players, you know, in Caleb and Roma Dunze will be in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. I think they are tremendous picks for this particular organization. I mean, Caleb Williams, even though there are 6 quarterbacks drafted it, you know, within the first 12 picks, Caleb Williams possesses, you know, the measurables and the talent, you know, to be one of those generational quarterbacks. I mean, it's hard to say this guy's not going to be a bust, but out of any quarterback, you know, in this draft, I would say he would be
the safest
pick, yeah, not to be the bust. And that that includes Romo Odunze. This guy is solid, is a very solid pick. If not for the fact that you got Marvin Harrison, you know, and
Malik Neighbors,
the LSU wide receiver out there, you know, going what, 4 and 6 ahead of him. This guy would have been, you know, in other drafts, he would have been like the first
pick. I think this wide receiver group is probably the strongest wide receiver group ever. And the top three are as good as you'll find
anybody
in any particular draft. So I agree with you. I mean, the fact that they get Caleb Williams and they add Roba Dunze, what I liked about the Bears, even if they have a defensive coach, is they went with offense to support Caleb Williams. Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Romo Dunze, Cole Kmet, they signed DeAndre Hopkins, and they still have Khalil Herbert. That is a special offensive team in the making, potentially. And so they've surrounded Caleb Williams and put him in a situation to succeed, unlike what Carolina did with Bryce Young, who had
nothing
this year. And so I agree with you. I think, they only had 5 picks, and they had to trade back into to get the 5th pick. They did take a punter in the 4th round, which is kind of crazy, although this punter is special. But the fact is,
if Caleb Williams hits and Romo Odunze hits like we expect them to do, you're looking at two Pro Bowl caliber players that could elevate Chicago from the doldrums to the top of the NFC North. So I
agree
with you.
Yeah, and that's what I'm projecting. Again, a lot of this is conjecture. We don't know what these guys are going to do, how their talents really translate into an NFL. We've seen the first round bust happen. These two players, in my opinion, are on the upside as far as, they don't match the criteria of being bust, in my opinion. That's why I give them... If they never even had a fifth-round pick, if they just stopped their draft right now, they're an A-plus to me. I think what they've given up to make these picks in the drafts...
It's pretty special.
It is. It's special.
Okay, so other teams that I thought did well, I like what Detroit did, especially with their first two picks. Their secondary was their weakness. Terrion Arnold drops to 24. They trade up from 29 to 24 to get him. Then Enos Rakestraw, a top five cornerback, falls to them in the second round. So they have taken care of their weak cornerback situation. And then I thought Mekhi Wingo in the sixth round, a tackle from LSU, for whatever reason fell. He was like the 88th ranked person. He fell into the early 200s. I thought they stole him there. I really like that pick. Another team that I thought did really well is the Washington Commanders. And the winner of our pool here for the March Madness, my cousin Michael Bright, is a huge Washington fan. And he asked me what I thought about the picks. And I thought early on in the draft, I think the Commanders hit a home run. They take Jaden Daniels in the first round, the quarterback of the future. I think I'm not going to say he's going to be special like Caleb Williams, but Washington hopes he is. Zerzan Newton in the early part of the second round, I think he's a perfect complement for Payne there as a defensive tackle. I love Mike Sterrell, the cornerback from Michigan. I think he's going to end up starting for them. And then Ben Sennett, the tight end from Kansas State, the number two tight end, I think he'll eventually be a starter. I think the Commanders landed four starters in the first two rounds of this year's draft. And with the signings of people like Bobby Wagner and Dante Fowler, I think there's a perfect blend of new guys and solid veterans that the Commanders could see a significant improvement this year over where they've been for the last couple of years. Any other teams that you like?
There are a number of teams. I wanted to go on the flip side. I wanted to talk about the
teams that struggle.
Teams that struggle.
Or questionable picks.
Very, very questionable.
Okay.
And I'll talk about this a little bit. I'll leave the obvious one for you. I'll leave Atlanta Falcons for you. I'm gonna touch bases in regards to let's say the Denver Broncos. I mean, Bo Nix at number 12. I know you had him pegged over there at number 12. You know, very good quarterback. 1 year playing in that offense, you know, making that transfer over down to Oregon. What is he, a fifth-year senior?
Yeah, 60 starts.
Yeah. A lot of projection out there. My thing is that was it Oregon? Why did he leave school after his junior year from his previous school?
Well, he actually had 2 years. He spent 2 years at Auburn and then the last 2 years at Oregon.
Okay,
but the last year, his fifth year, was 45 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, second in the Heisman. He had a special senior year, but. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who are surprised at that. But I had just heard that Sean Payton was enamored with the similarities between Bo Nix and Drew Brees. So Bo Nix is not for every team, but Bo Nix was for Sean Payton and this team.
Drew Brees was special. I mean, everybody...
And he was a second-round pick. He went with the first pick in the second round.
He was, but I still remember his game... was it against Boston College, if I can remember correctly, Purdue versus BC?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think that was the game where he, threw that Hail Mary. I mean, Drew Brees was special. Bo Nix, albeit good, did not remind me of Drew Brees in the slightest bit. I hope he does well. To me, pick at number 12. Again, six quarterbacks were chosen
in the first 12 picks.
In the first 12 picks ever. And if you can go back to however you want within the NFL annals, you know, and you'll be lucky to get two good quarterbacks in any given year, at least two good quarterbacks that were worthy of first round.
Well, that's
picks.
What we talked about when we did our our draft preview show. Is that recently, in recent history, the bust rate or the non-success rate for quarterbacks is extremely high. I mean, in that draft, you had Trevor Lawrence that succeeded, and everyone else: Mac Jones, Trey Lance, Zach Wilson are busts. Or perceived, and Zach Wilson's in Denver too now. He was traded by the Jets to the Broncos, and then Justin Fields is questionable at this point in time where he's at. So that would be at most a hit rate of 1 out of 4 with one questionable one. The last draft that everyone was pretty successful is probably with the Burrow, Herbert, Tua, Jalen Hurts. I mean, that's a pretty successful draft for the top four people. But other than that, there's been a lot of busts recently. And then this year, you know all six are not going to hit.
Yeah.
You know that's not going to happen. So it becomes interesting to see. We both agree that Caleb Williams will probably not bust. So which of the other five are going to be the candidates to bust? That's the question.
It's exactly like that. And the fact that being that, the Broncos didn't have a second-round pick. Their next pick came into the third round. They picked up Ellis, a defensive end out of Utah.
I like him.
Yeah, he's good. But, again, you have a first-round pick at 12. You don't have a second pick. And then you're going to wait till a 76th pick, to get as your next pick.
What I think happened was the fact that Michael Penix went 8 and then McCarthy went 10. He was the only quarterback left. So where they may have traded down or tried to wait into the second round, they're like, oh my gosh, somebody's going to take him before we pick again. And they just went ahead and drafted him.
In my opinion, the way that they should have done this, I think they could have got better, at least quality, immediately. I don't know if this is something that, their management team wants to at least play for the future. I mean, you guys, if you're in Denver right now and you suck for a while, you might not even be there to see the fruits of your labors.
Well, I think with the Broncos right now, they have Zach Wilson and Jarrett Stidham. So they really don't have a viable quarterback.
I think people
are hoping that it's going to be Bo Nix, and we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, they would have been better served trade down, gather more picks within the first and second round, and at least get impact players immediately. Because, like I said, after that, you had the 76th pick, which, is not a guarantee. I mean, it goes by the draft. I mean, if you see first-round picks hit more than second-round picks, second-round picks hit more than third-round picks, you can find your diamond in the rough like Tom Brady in the sixth round. And
or
one.
Puka Nacua in the fifth.
Yeah, but I mean, that's basically a roll of – I mean, worse than a roll of the dice, on the crap table. So I'm giving the Denver Broncos
a thumb down.
I think next to other than the Atlanta Falcons, I think they had the worst draft.
Well, I want to highlight a couple of other teams that I thought did well versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Their general manager is just an absolute professional.
He got lucky
at the draft. I mean, they just do an incredible job. Quinton Mitchell drops to them at 22. They were weak in the secondary. In the second round, Cooper DeJean drops. So they trade up to go get him. And then they get Jalix Hunt, who I love. This is somebody that I wanted the Rams to target as a developmental. This is a Cornell graduate that started as a safety that has grown into an edge rusher. And then they pick up Will Shipley, who's a perfect complement. Not a compliment, but a backup to Saquon Barkley. They lose DeAndre Swift. They got Saquon Barkley. I think Will Shipley is perfect. He can run. He can catch. He can block. And then Jeremiah Trotter, was a Philadelphia Eagle for many, many years. They get him. There's some questions about his athleticism, But the DNA says that he's probably going to be well. And I even like the pick of Johnny Wilson, who some had as early as the second or third round. The 6'6" receiver from Florida State tends to drop the ball, but what a weapon. Again, against my Miami Hurricanes, every time it was 3rd and 9, they would throw a ball to him and we couldn't out-touch him, and then they would get a first down. Johnny Wilson provides something different from A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. And then the last thing, team that I wanted to... Wait, who did I want to highlight? Well, I thought the Minnesota Vikings did a good job. They had to give up a lot to get Dallas Turner, but they didn't have to trade a lot to move up to get J.J. McCarthy. They moved up one spot and gave up practically nothing. And then they did trade a lot next year, a 3 and a 4 next year, to move up from 23 to 17 to get Dallas Turner. But you were able to replace Kirk Cousins and Danielle Hunter in the first round, and those guys will get you compensatory picks next year. So I thought the Minnesota Vikings did a pretty good job.
I agree
in that regard.
I agree, and I thought Dallas Turner, even though they gave up a lot for him, was worth it, because if you saw a lot of those mock drafts, he was a top 10 choice. He was the first or the second defensive player to
be taken? Supposed. I mean, for me, I had him going to the Atlanta Falcons at 8.
Yeah. I mean, he was, and I think he's just that good. It's just that everyone panicked on the quarterback run, you know, and that's what dropped him that far. Because
Ernie, for the first time ever, the first 15 picks in the NFL draft, all offense, no defense to the first 15 picks. That was nuts.
That was. Well, I'd like to comment in regards to that Philadelphia draft. I mean, to me, they were the most fortuitous. Everybody knows. Everybody in that NFC, what is that? NFC, not North. NFC
East.
East knows that the Philadelphia Eagles' weakness was their secondary. And to come up with, boy, I wanted Quinion Mitchell. I mean, Monty knew. We were texting each other in the beginning part of the draft, and I was saying, Mitchell, Mitchell, Mitchell. Philadelphia got him over there. And then to come back with Cooper DeJean, which I actually projected to go in the first round myself. I mean, I don't think they're going to be immediate successes in Philadelphia, but boy, towards the ending part of next year, the ending of next season, I think they're going to, you know, they're going to get their roots settled down. And I think that's going to be a team that's going to be like 2 years ago that's going to be contending for, you know, a high berth in that playoff spot. I'd be very afraid of the Philadelphia Eagles, because they already have the rest of the pieces.
Yeah, I would agree. And so the last team that I want to kind of highlight is the Kansas City Chiefs. I can't believe the Buffalo Bills gifted them the fastest guy in the draft, trading their pick to Kansas City to allow them to take Xavier Worthy, who's not Tyreek Hill, but he's fast like Tyreek Hill. Faster. And that's kind of what Kansas City seemed to be missing, that guy over the top. And then Ernie had Kingsley Sumataya going in the first round. They get him at the end of the second round. Jared Wiley, a great tight end, pass catching 6'6" tight end from TCU. Kelsey ain't getting any younger, as dominant as he is. Taylor Swift just dropped another album. There's no way that Kelsey has to play any more than one more year. So they get him. Jaden Hicks somehow falls. He's a safety from Washington State until the fourth round. And then they get a cum laude from Cornell that transferred to play his fifth year center at Penn State in Nomar Norzat. The thing with Kansas City is there's no way they can pay all their offensive linemen. So they're going to have to make a decision next year when Trey Smith is a free agent, Creed Humphrey is a free agent, Tooney is up for another contract. So they kind of protect themselves with picking up a center now. So I thought Kansas City did a credible job. But in terms of all of the Hawaii sports radio people, Kuule Agbayani, a lifelong Chicago Bear fan, has to be as excited as she's ever been in her lifetime, because she's like half Ernie's age in her early 40s. No, she's not in her 40s, but I was just making fun of Ernie. And then Paul Breck and his Jets. I got to think you're pretty excited if you're them. I know a lot of people wanted Brock Bowers, but you get Fashanu to be that protection in the event that Tyron Smith and Moses get hurt. You get Worley, a valuable wide receiver. You get Braylon Allen, another wide receiver. So I think Paul is probably going to be excited for his Jets. But let's be honest. At the end of the day, the Rams had the best draft of everybody in the NFL.
Well, we'll give Monty that because in 8 years, he has not seen a first-round pick, so we'll just give it to him. we'll let him have
it. I'll take it.
We'll let him have it.
I will take it, and I need a refill because I'm running out here. All right, that's Ernie. I'm Monty. Together, we are the Sports Rivals, having an absolute blast recapping the NFL draft. We're about 35 minutes in. We're going to transition now to the NBA. I only have one comment to make. I want to make a toast to the Los Angeles Lakers for not getting swept and beating the Denver Nuggets tonight, 119 to 108, to stave off a second consecutive sweep and to break an 11-game losing streak to the Denver Nuggets. And then I want to shout out to my daughter Crystal's boyfriend, War, who just texted me something here, and I want to read this to you guys. In this series that the Nuggets lead 3-1, the Nuggets have led the Lakers for a total of 41 minutes and 53 seconds. The Lakers have led for a total of 136 minutes and 31 seconds. So the Lakers have led for 77% of this series and find themselves down 3-1. Like I told Ernie today at the gym when we were working out, the biggest difference in this series is not the quality of the players, although Nikola Jokic is brilliant and Jamal Murray is the most clutch player in the NBA. Jamal Murray shooting less than 40% in this series. Lakers have done a tremendous job slowing him down, except for the end of the game. The biggest difference is the huge gap between Malone and Darvin Ham. If you're a Laker fan, even if you're not a Laker fan,
I'm not.
I think you can kind of have come to the agreement that Darvin Ham has not been the most successful coach for the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers have led in double digits in every single game and yet lost the first three games. It's the same formula. We're up 10 at the end of the first quarter. We're up 13 to 15 at halftime. And in the second half, the adjustments are made. Denver comes back, and they win it at the end of the game. It's crazy. I'm just proud of the Lakers for not getting swept. Super proud of Anthony Davis, who's had a brilliant series against Nikola Jokic, averaging over 30 points and 16 rebounds a game. LeBron's doing his thing. D'Lo is he's the hit and miss guy.
Yeah, he is.
Today, he scored 21. Game 3, scored 0. It's the unpredictability, but LeBron and AD has given them everything. The Lakers have played the Nuggets about as well as you can play the Nuggets. Still falling themselves down 3-1, but we're setting ourselves up for the greatest comeback in NBA history.
I just
have to say that.
No. You know what? This series is closer than everybody thought. And I agree with you. The problem has been it's either the execution of LA's offense, especially after halftime. That third quarter has got to be the nightmare quarter for any LA fan to, you know, have leads in every single game.
Double digit leads.
Every single game, yet to flounder it all away in the third quarter and have Denver come back. You know, other than that miracle shot from Murray, which broke my heart. I was going to text Monty, but I figured, I don't want to make him cry, you know. Because I felt it for him.
Because I know what the history has been, I find myself not watching these games, but I did turn that on late. And that was the most heartbreaking Los Angeles Laker defeat that I can remember since probably losing to the Celtics in the 2008 finals. I can't think of another more devastating loss up 20 points
to
lose like that with down the stretch.
Well, you didn't watch the whole game because actually what in my opinion, I know, no, don't blame the refs. I blame some of this on the refs because not only did I make the call, when you have it – here's my opinion on this whole don't blame the refs. In the regular season, don't blame the refs. In the postseason, when the motions are elevated tenfold, one wrong call that favors another team versus another, that plays an emotional toll on every. It can change the momentum like no other.
Yeah, you know, in that particular game, you're talking about the D'Angelo Russell overturn.
Oh my
god! He clearly got hit on the head, and then they overturned that call. That was crazy.
And they're saying that the foul happened before the incident, but you know, and they cannot call. And okay. But that's not the only call, you know. There were some other calls in that game, which I hate the Lakers. I'm a Celtic fan, you know, and I felt bad for the Lakers in that particular game. But the game is the series. Even though they swept, they could have been swept. They came back. I really think this, even if it ends next game, this was a very competitive series.
Yeah, and I'm still glad that the Lakers didn't do what a lot of people said, mail in the play-in game and try to play somebody else. At the end of the day, you're going to have to beat the Denver Nuggets, and we're playing them as tough as you can possibly play them. Now, in the rest of the West, I mean, the Timberwolves are rolling over Phoenix. They're up 3-0. Phoenix looks like they've quit. I would expect them to possibly put this away. At most, it goes to game 5. Surprisingly, OKC is also blowing out the Pelicans. They're up 3-0. Well,
that's not surprising.
Without Zion. But the first game was 94-92, but the last two have been blowouts. That looks like that's probably going to be a sweep. I would expect Dallas to probably win the last two. The Clippers are not playing well. Kawhi is questionable. George and Harden are not playing that well. Dallas looks like they're going to roll through that. So it really does look like it's going to end up being Denver and Minnesota, OKC and Dallas. I still think Dallas will probably knock off OKC.
Me too.
And then we're looking at Ernie still loves the Timberwolves against the Nuggets. I still believe in the Nuggets. Unless somebody gets hurt, I think they would win that. Ernie says 7. I would say 7 maybe, but I say 5 or 6.
Yeah, just to clarify that, I picked the Nuggets. I think it's going to go 7, though.
Yeah, because I know Ernie loves the Timberwolves and their defensive prowess. Yeah. So that's that. So that's what's happening in the West. Again, it's 3-1 Nuggets. It's 3-0 Timberwolves. It's 3-0 OKC. It's 2-1 Dallas going into tomorrow's matchup. In the East, Cleveland wins the first two. Orlando takes the next two. It's 2-2.
It's over.
The Milwaukee one is over because Dame Lillard is now with an Achilles strain. And he's out. The Pacers are up 2-1. They're going to win that series. And then Philadelphia behind Joel Embiid's 50 points. They're up 2-1. I still give them a puncher's chance. And I loved what Joel... I don't like Joel Embiid. I never did. But I loved what he said last night about how he's competing, even with injuries. Did you see that a week ago... He suffered from a minor case of Bell's palsy.
No, I didn't.
He has Bell's palsy, which is why he's wearing glasses. Mm. And he has a hard time talking because his face is drooping. And he's still playing, putting up 50 points. I give him absolute credit. It's 2-1 Knicks. I still expect the Knicks to win that. And then Ernie, I said the Celtics are going to go 12-0. Ernie said, nope, that's not going to happen. And lo and behold, they give up game 2. They come back today and romp Miami in Miami by like, 30 or more by the time it ended. So the Celtics are up 2-1. Your comments on the Celtics and the rest of the East?
Well, I kind of knew. That's what the Celtics do. I mean, they're a very good team. And in a 7-game series, I like them against anyone. But they are prone. They are very prone to when they get their confidence up and they think they're all it, that they can do. Hey, the Miami Heat shot 54% from 3-point. And here's what the Celtics' response was. Soft coverage from the perimeter. It was said through in the post game that's what they did. They thought that the percentage would come back down to earth. What a mistake. You know, Caleb Martin, who torched the Celtics in last year's Eastern Conference Finals, shot 50-something percent from three-point range. last playoffs, only to cool down against the Denver Nuggets, shooting 30% in that particular season. Did it once again, going 5 of 6 in that particular game, coupled with Tyler Hero having his best game in the series with 14 assists. And if you tell me that a team is going to shoot 54% from three-point land and only score 111 points, I would have said, I'll take that any day, because the averages will come back down to earth, and that's exactly what happened today. Celtics blow them out. You like the Knicks. I actually like the Sixers in this particular series. Jalen Brunson has not been the Jalen Brunson. Now, I can see him not doing well in one game, maybe even two games, but this is three games in a row. Jalen Brunson has...
Well, he had 39 points yesterday.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he had 39 yesterday, I believe.
Okay, scratch that.
But Embiid at 50, so...
Yeah, well, in my opinion, my thought on top of that was that they just don't have the firepower, you know, other than Jalen Brunson, with Julius Randle out. Anunoby, even though he is an addition, a good addition to that Knicks team, doesn't balance out the fact that the 76ers have Maxey and all the other compliments to that team. I still, even though they're down 2-1 at this point, think the 76ers... might take that series, although I give a slight edge to the Knicks. If it goes 7, I'm going to pick the 76ers in that game. I agree with you in the Bucks-Pacers series. That one is over. The Magic, I knew that they were going to come back. Cleveland with... I think they're headed on Cancun. I really don't think Spider's coming back to Cleveland. I think he's checked out. I think he wants to be... either a Miami Heat next year, or
Laker.
Not a Laker. They can't do that. But anyways, I think he's out of Cleveland. I like the Magic to win that series, which makes it easy for Boston, but they will lose a game in that series also.
Yeah, I mean, I still think the Boston Celtics are overwhelming favorites. I agree. Like you said, I mean, Indiana's going to roll, probably win the next two games. I can't imagine Milwaukee putting up much of a fight. I still like Cleveland, believe it or not. I mean, I think because they're going to continue to win at home, and then they get game 7 at home. And then Philadelphia, I think, is the more talented team because Embiid is the best player on the court when he's healthy. But the Knicks, I think, will find a way. If it goes to 7, I can't imagine the Knicks losing a game 7 at home. But they almost lost game 2. They could have lost game 2.
They should have lost game 2.
They should have lost game 2.
That was two fouls on Maxey.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the situation right now. But Ernie's sitting pretty because his Celtics are going to waltz. Even if they hiccup one game in each series, they're still going to waltz into the finals. I still think the West is going to be a gauntlet. No matter who gets there, they're going to be exhausted when they do get there. So it's going to be interesting. I'm just, like I said, I'm just happy the Lakers finally got a win. They've been playing too hard and playing too well and leading too much in this series to get swept. It just didn't seem right. So I'm ecstatic they won one. I feel much better. They can lose by 50 in game 5 and... whatever.
They'll probably
still have a 10-point lead after the first quarter.
And then blow it.
Exactly. So that is what's happening in the NBA playoffs. By next week, we should have some finalization of the whole first round and a setup for the second round. It'll be a lot more interesting to see how things are going. Now, before I turn it over to Ernie's closing thought, I do want to highlight, like I said earlier, Caitlin Clark signing a historic deal with Nike, 8 years, $28 million. I think, and Ernie thinks the same way, this is going to be a deal for Nike because I think they're going to make their money back in a no-bono. They're going to give her a shoe. And on Twitter, I was going back and forth with some guys. What guy is going to buy her shoe? Maybe no guy is going to buy her shoe.
There are a lot of girls.
But a lot of girls will. And there are a ton of guys that are already buying her Indiana Fever jersey. So it's not just about the shoe. It's about merchandise. So just because she's a female doesn't mean you have to buy a feminine shirt or jacket or hat. Nike, there's nobody better than Nike in marketing. And yeah, they're going to leverage her. And I was sharing with Ernie... one of my contact people lives in Baltimore, and she's going home this summer, and she's a former AAU female basketball player that is a huge Caitlin Clark fan.
found out that the Indiana Fever was going to be in Washington while she was home, went to buy tickets. Now, most women games are in different facilities than the men's games. They play in smaller gyms,
right,
because they never sold as many. So she bought her tickets. The game sold out in 30 minutes. She had to buy it on the secondary market. They decided to move the game from the Mystics court to the Wizards court, canceling her tickets. The game sold out again in 30 minutes. The Washington Wizards Stadium sold out in 30 minutes. She had to buy it on the secondary market. She spent $300 a ticket to sit in the upper deck of the Wizards facility, the nosebleeds, to watch Caitlin Clark. And this is what's happening across the WNBA. She's selling out every... It reminds me, Ernie, of when Messi said he was coming to Miami and all of his games sold out immediately. That's exactly what's happening with Caitlin Clark. And as much as I like Caitlin Clark and watched all her games, it blows me away. I'm fascinated by business, and the love affair with her blows me away. I hope for her sake and the WNBA's sake that her star stays glowing, because if not, all of this momentum is going to come to a crashing halt. So, yeah.
If I was an NBA, WNBA player, I would give her a free lane to the basket, you know, at least once a game, because she'll be the bread and butter of that league. She is to the WNBA what Tiger Woods was to golf.
Yeah, which will benefit everyone in the long run.
Everybody. When Tiger Woods first started in golf, the purses were like $2, $3 million. Now they're like $20 million and whatnot. I mean, the richest people, I mean, you look at Phil Mickelson, who is like considered, I wouldn't even say he was considered the second best golfer in the world, but that guy is one of the richest athletes in the world, thanks to Tiger Woods.
Oh, absolutely. So, Caitlin Clark, congratulations to you. Let's see. I'm anxious to see how this plays out. Their first set of games will start in the month of May. We'll see how this plays out. But one thing is for sure, 8 years, $28 million, record contract for a female athlete with Nike. All of her games being sold out. There's certainly more interest in the WNBA than ever in our lifetime by any stretch of the imagination. So congratulations to her. Covered a lot of NFL draft, covered a lot of NBA, highlighted Caitlin Clark. Where are you going for your closing
thought? I'm
going
to go back to NFL, and I think we touched upon this, but, you know, being that we're already into our 52nd minute to this podcast, it'll be quick, so, you know, we can work on that.
So I'm go back to drinking?
Exactly, because, yeah. But anyways, I'm going to talk about why is the NFL so enamored about picking quarterbacks this high and reaching, in my opinion. Six quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks, when history has already shown you that if you get even two quarterbacks in the first round, that you're doing well. I mean, you already mentioned one quarterback class out there. I think the one prior to that would have been the 2004 class with Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger.
Well, that was Eli Manning.
Oh, yeah.
Rivers and Roethlisberger.
And
Roethlisberger.
I think that was the one that was prior to that. And before that, I think you have to go back into, like, before we were even born, you know, to find quarterbacks.
That was just before Hawaii was a state, when you consider Ernie.
maybe. But the risk, I mean, I really hope that I don't wish any bad luck on any quarterback. But the statistics show, you know, that they can do well, but being worthy of a top... To me, if you're picked in the top 12 picks of an NFL draft, my minimum expectation is that you be all pro at least once, multiple Pro Bowls, and have a significant impact. I'd be surprised if two of the players in this NFL draft hit that particular status, let alone six. I believe that there's going to be four busts, and I hate to say it.
So the only two will be Caleb Williams and Bo Nix will be successful.
I don't think it's good. I really like Drake May. I really like Drake May. I the LSU quarterback, Jalen Daniels. I like him. I think he's poor man's.
Lamar Jackson?
No, not Lamar Jackson. The Houston.
CJ Stroud?
CJ Stroud. I'm sorry.
He can run a lot better.
Yeah,
than Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, but that's my comparison to him. I think CJ Stroud has more moxie than him. I think he'll be a good quarterback. I don't think he's going to be first round worthy according to my criteria, which I just mentioned. But the rest, those other teams who pick later, I think they set their franchise back. Again, when you pick a quarterback that early, very difficult to go back next season and pick another quarterback that early. It's been proven. I mean, the quarterback is the most important position, and if you fail to replace that position, it's devastating. And that's why they make the home run swings on top of that, because you know they know it's like that. But when you see the quarterbacks coming off 1, 2, 3, to me, in my opinion, if you play the statistics on top of that, they are not in your favor. Definitely.
I guess the thought process is that the reason why they're picking 1, 2, 3 is because they don't have a quarterback. And maybe that's why they shoot in the dark. But I do agree with you. I thought Brock Purdy was going to change this because he was Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah, he was.
And the 49ers have a different model. Don't pay the quarterback, pay everybody else. And I thought that was going to change the way people take a look at things, but it hasn't. I mean, everybody's shooting for the Mahomes or the Josh Allen or somebody.
But even Mahomes was a later round pick.
Boy, he was 10th in the first round. But he wasn't a first pick, but he was a first round pick. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I agree that but the thing with the quarterback position is you got to start paying them $50, $60 million a year. I'd rather have the Brock Purdy model where you have a tremendous team and you ask him to do so much. They did lose to the Kansas City Chiefs, but I thought that was going to catch on, but I was wrong. Six quarterbacks in the first 12 picks, Ernie. And there's no way that half are going to hit.
No.
That hasn't happened other than a couple of times in the last 20 years.
I don't even think it's happened a couple. According to based on my criteria, all pro, several Pro Bowls, and whatnot, I mean, to me, that's deserving of a top 12 player.
Yeah.
Even if you made multiple Pro Bowls, but not even all pro, I consider you a second-round pick. But the NFL is a little bit different because of the position of quarterback being like the most important position in the NFL. It's elevated, but you increase your risk. My problem with this whole draft is that you already had picks going 1, 2, 3. We've seen that happen. And the risk versus reward, I'm fine with that. At least you picked with the first three. But after that, 8, 10, 12, boy, you're really, I mean, the... I would like to see the numbers, the probability factors that go into that, and I can guarantee you it's 5% or less.
Yeah. So the thing that I think Ernie and I are scratching our head the most about, because again, like Ernie says, 1, 2, 3, they don't have quarterbacks. I think that made sense. Even 10, Vikings don't have a quarterback. They lost Kirk Cousins, so they draft McCarthy. As much as Ernie doesn't like the Bo Nix pick, they don't have a quarterback, so drafting Bo Nix. I can understand all of that. The Atlanta Falcons pick of Michael Penix, after giving $180 million for 4 years to Kirk Cousins, of which $100 million is guaranteed, is asinine. Either one of two things happened. They shouldn't have signed Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
If they were enamored with Michael Penix, they should have done their homework earlier before they gave Kirk Cousins $100 million guaranteed. Or they shouldn't have drafted Michael Penix.
They shouldn't.
And there's some people are like, you know what? Maybe Kirk Cousins is not going to be healed. That's why they drafted Penix. I get that. If you wanted to draft Penix because you thought he was good, so be it. Then do your homework and don't give $180 million to Kirk Cousins. because I think that was asinine, and I also don't think it's fair to Kirk Cousins. He committed to them for 4 years. He's stuck there now. Or Penix is 24. What are you going to do? Sit him for 2-3 years like Jordan Love? He'll be 27 years old.
Yeah.
The Atlanta pick was... Not that it's Michael Penix is a bad pick, but the way they handled the last 2 months of the offseason was sheer idiocy, in my opinion. So I agree. I mean, I agree with Ernie. I think there's so much fascination and enamorization with quarterbacks. Everybody thinks they have to have one in order to win. And Patrick Mahomes is kind of skewing that because he's so good and he's winning so many times. But let's not make a mistake. Tom Brady was a 6th-round draft pick, yeah, right? And then, you know, so between Brady and Mahomes, they've won 10 of the last, 20 Super Bowls.
Hey, your opposing quarterback in the Super Bowl was Mr. Irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he's doing well itself. So I agree with Ernie. I mean, I think there's so much gusto in terms of quarterback. I understand some of these picks. But the fascination with making sure you take a quarterback, what it did do is benefit the Rams and the Steelers. Some people dropped down a little bit further, or else we may have taken Bo Nix at 19.
Yeah, it did. I mean, and I hate to say it, all he did was make your competition stronger.
Yep. Okay. So again, we want to thank the Hawaii Sports Radio Network again. Paul Breck, Ku'ule Agbayani, weekday mornings 8 to 9. Wake up in the den on 760 AM, 95.1 FM. Right now, they are all over the island carrying OIA sports, softball, baseball, etc. They got Dallas Cowboy football, the Clipper basketball, USC sports, as well as HPU and Chaminade sports. They do an incredible job. HawaiiSportsRadio.com, HISportsRadio.com. You can listen to the Sports Rivals podcast right there on that website. Again, it's HISportsRadio.com. For us, social media, Sports Rivals podcast on IG and Facebook, Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter. Ernie, anything else?
Pauhana time.
All right. Congratulations to all the NFL teams for a fantastic draft. You are all in the Rams dust. The Rams have the number one draft in the NBA. And get ready. By next week, Sunday, the Lakers will have pulled off the shocking 7-game comeback victory over the Denver Nuggets. And until next week, gang, the Sports Rivals are out.
Thank you for joining us on the Sports Rivals podcast. Check us out on social media at Sports Rivals Podcasts on Instagram and at Sports Rivals Pod on Twitter, where you can share topics you'd like to hear.